fire rescue, EMS, law enforcement. These are the three components of public safety. And those who answer the call are the first responders. Welcome to another episode of Five Alarm Task Force, news and issues for today's first responders with your host, Steve Green. Five Alarm Task Force presents some of the best instructors and mentors in public safety today to educate, elucidate, and entertain. No topic is out of bounds and every opinion has value. Five Alarm Task Force is brought to you by Insight Fire Training, LLC, your best bet for fire service thermal imaging camera training, and our promotional partners, Dalmatian Productions, The Firehouse Tribune, Chief Miller Products and Sites, Hennessy Distributing, your source for the cool towel, the Firefighter Cancer Foundation, fighting to extinguish firefighting cancer since 2004, the Firefighter Cancer Support Network, and the 2019 Great Florida Fire School. Remember, our ultimate goal is for you to be safe and return home after every call. So insert those earphones or turn up those speakers. The 5-Alarm Task Force is being dispatched right now. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, or good night. Welcome to another episode of 5-Alarm Task Force, news and issues for today's first responders. I'm your host, Steve Green. I have some great guests today. I'll tell you about them in just a moment. If you are a new listener to our podcast and would like to catch up on some of our older podcasts, feel free to visit our website, www.dalmatianproductions.tv, and click on the podcast tab, and it'll take you to the entire library of episodes of 5-Alarm Task Force. And if you're on the website, please take a moment and sign up for our newsletter. It's on the homepage. And we send it out several times a year. It's not spam, and we don't turn over your email address or sell them to any third parties. It's just a way to stay in touch and stay on the edge a little bit of some of the new information coming through about our podcast, Dalmatian Productions, and our blog. Also, if you follow us on Facebook, either at /DalmatProd or DalmatProdFire, please like us on those pages, and please leave comments. We are running some trials to videocast live on Facebook, and we'll let you know when it's going to be a set deal that every podcast will be there and on a YouTube channel. Also, whichever platform you use to listen to the podcast, whether it's iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, or whatever, they usually have a place for you to rate us. And we need you to give us, please, a top 5-star rating and great comments. That helps move us up in their eyes, as well as allowing people who are searching for us to find us more quickly. And if you like the show and you want to share your interest in the show with friends and family, the best way to do that is by helping a great charity at the same time. And we have a little store we set up with our friends from Teespring. You go to the website bit, as in B, capital B as in Bravo, it.ly/Dalmat Store, with a capital D and a capital S. And there you'll see several T-shirts and a couple of mugs you can choose from. And the majority of the net proceeds are donated to the National Fallen Firefighters Foundation. So that's really it. Now, I want to tell you about my guests today. Today, one guest is Dr. Paul Davis. Dr. Davis is a founder of the First Responder Institute, a 501c3 philanthropic organization dedicated to supporting the public safety sector through research and education. He has consulted for a number of law enforcement organizations, including the NYPD, DEA, U.S. Secret Service, Pennsylvania State Police, U.S. Marshals Service, IACP, and the FBI. He's been a consultant to the U.S. Navy. He is an internationally recognized authority on the subject of fitness standards and equal employment opportunity issues. Dr. Davis has participated in over 60 legal proceedings as an expert witness. He is a member of the American College of Sports Medicine and holds that organization's highest level of certification. He has authored over 200 technical reports, manuals, articles, and most recently, co-authored with Dr. Brian Sharkey the book Hard Work, dealing with his research on the relationship between human physical performance factors and health. Also joining us today is Assistant Chief Jack J. Taylor. The chief has been an assistant chief with the Irving Fire Department since 2014 and is a 24-year member of the department. He currently serves as the Public Information Officer and Administrative Chief, which oversees fire prevention, the facilities, and all emergency medical services. He holds a Bachelor of Science Biology degree from Southwestern Oklahoma State University in 1991. He also has earned two associate degrees from Tyler Texas Junior College, one in kinesiology in 1987 and one in emergency medical service professions in 2011. Chief Taylor has completed the TEEX Fire Service Chief Executive Officer Program, as well as the Certified Chief Executive Officer Program through the Texas Fire Chiefs Association. He has also received designation as a Chief Fire Officer through the Commission on Public Safety Excellence. Chief Taylor is currently in year three of the four-year Executive Fire Officer Program at the National Fire Academy. Chief Taylor holds Texas Commission on Fire Protection certifications as Fire Officer 4, Firefighter Master, Fire Instructor 3, Incident Safety Officer, and Driver Pumper Operator, as well as a licensed paramedic. Chief Taylor has also been a professional actor and Division I college football referee for over 20 years. So we'll be right back with our guest talking about this excellent fitness program at the Irving Fire Department right after these words. So please, don't go away. New technology for the fire service seems to appear almost every day, and that technology demands a learning curve, especially if we're talking about thermal imaging cameras. That's where Insight Fire Training LLC is your best bet. With an excellent reputation across the U.S., Insight Fire Training will meet all your TIC training needs. Their curriculum is peer-reviewed and has been used internationally. Their instructors are Level 1 thermography certified, and they have taught in 33 states and 4 countries. Their courses run from introductory to training the trainers. Courses are available online, for the classroom, classroom hybrid, and even live fire. Insight Training LLC is proficient in over 40 thermal imaging cameras, so you feel confident they will know your make and model. Best of all, programs are customized to your specific needs, and their cadre of fire service veterans are vetted craftsmen of Project Kill the Flashover. They are so proficient that they have trained TIC manufacturers on how to best use and sell their own product. That's Insight Fire Training LLC. Look them up on InsightTrainingLLC.com. Your best bet for TIC training. Would you like to meet up with Andy and the team from Insight Training? Well, 2019 will be the year to do it. Here's some of their upcoming schedule. This weekend, March 22nd and 24th in Southport, North Carolina, an 8-hour live fire demonstration and classroom on Introduction to Tactical Thermal Imaging. April 9th through the 13th at FDIC 2019 in Indianapolis, a general conference presentation that will cover the often confusing and complex areas of thermal imaging from purchasing to policy. This is not a sales presentation. It is an educational program that is designed to assist firefighters in understanding the specifications of fire service thermal imaging cameras and how it will affect their ability to perform on the fire ground. April 19th and 20th at Hampton, Pennsylvania, 2-day classroom and live fire tactical thermal imaging training with instructors Andy Starnes and Thomas Anderson. April 26th through the 28th, Caddo Parish, Louisiana, 12-hour live fire and classroom presentation on tactical thermal imaging, enhanced search methodology with instructors Andy Starnes and Thomas Anderson. May 2nd through the 4th, the VCOS Fire Chiefs Conference, instructor Andy Starnes presents spiritual survival in the fire service. All proceeds go to charity. May 10th through 12th, the West Virginia Public Safety Expo. Insight Training will conduct an 8-hour live fire training event where students will complete various scenario-based objectives. This course is well attended, and as it is our third year teaching there, it represents the Kanawha County region and a few states surrounding West Virginia. Instructors Thomas Anderson, Terrence Shoemake, Andy Starnes, and Joey Baxter. And June 14th, the North Metro Fire Department of Colorado for an 8-hour tactical thermal imaging classroom training. Insight Training LLC, your best bet for TIC training. We want to take a moment to tell you about one of our great promotional partners, the Firehouse Tribune. The Firehouse Tribune is an emergency services web-based platform where individuals can learn, train, and share ideas and experiences. In life, both on duty and off, we live by one creed. Excellence is a habit, not a goal. Interested? Find them on Twitter at FH Tribune and visit their website at www.thefirehousetribune.com. Remember to always work hard, stay safe, and live inspired.
Welcome to Chief Miller. Chief Miller operates the largest social media page dedicated to the men and women of the fire service from around the world. Check him out on Instagram at Chief_Miller. Find him on Twitter at Chief_Miller. And check out the website where you can find Chief Miller Apparel at ChiefMillerApparel.com.
And welcome back to this episode of Five Alarm Task Force, news and issues for today's first responders. And as you heard earlier, my guests today are Paul O. Davis, Ph.D., FACSM, and Assistant Chief Jack J. Taylor of the Irvington Fire Department. We're going to be talking about today, it seems like only maybe in the last 5-8 years, there's been a real big push on firefighter fitness, health, wellness, fitness for duty, and of course, the cancer initiative and behavioral health initiatives. But the fitness thing, there have been a few firefighters who have been on it their whole career, but a lot of people just kind of jumped on it with a health push in the fire service over the last, maybe 5 to 8 years. However, today, Dr. Davis and Chief Taylor are going to talk about the Irving Fire Department in Texas that has been on a successful fitness program within the department for over 25 years. So, who wants to start? Dr. Davis, Chief Taylor, who's going to start telling us about how this program came to be?
Go ahead, John. Okay. Why don't you give them a rundown of what y'all have done?
Absolutely. With the Irving Fire Department, 25 years ago, you know, in the history of the fire department, one thing about Irving is we're a city of 250,000 residents. We run an average of 26,000 runs a year. We have over 300 apartment complexes in the city of Irving, and we responded in 2018 to 291 structure fires, 13 of which were multi-alarm fires. So that's over a multi-alarm fire a month, three firefighter staffing in the hot southern part of the United States, which, as we all know, there are different climate challenges in the different parts of the country. But long story short, we have to be fit to do our job. And if you rewind back to 1994, the tradition in the fire service has always been that, you know, the fire service requires a ready to perform mode with all aspects of a fire equipment and staffing being tested. And this is verified by testing at regular intervals in a non-emergency setting with recognized standards that we're all used to. We test our fire pumpers to make sure they're up to pressure and capacity. We test our fire hose to make sure they're also up to standard. Our aerial mounted ladders, ground ladders are tested annually. And our SCBAs are tested. We do this all and then check our equipment on a daily basis. And we've done that for years and years. Well, back in 1994, the Irving Fire Department, we discussed the fact that we were forgetting about a major commodity, a major component of what we're checking on a daily basis. And that's our staffing. And it's how we keep ourselves in tune and how we're ready to perform in a moment's notice. And we felt like we were lacking in that fold and we needed to do something about that. In 1994, we had 230 firefighters on this department. And when we instituted our fitness task test that we call it, it is a job-based test that we tested physical fitness with our firefighters. We only had 6 firefighters over the age of 50 in Irving that were on fire equipment at that time. And so we can get more into the cultural shift and things that we had as a challenge that we encountered during that process. But we've made great strides from 1994. And then in 1997, as we know, the International Association of Firefighters and the International Association of Fire Chiefs had a joint wellness initiative for peer fitness training. And all that has evolved to the peer fitness training to where You know, we have CFC, Certified Fitness Coordinators, that can script our injured firefighters and provide programs for them and get them rehabbed and back in service. And where we had a workman's comp average days off of 72 days back in 1994, fast forward 10 years to 2003, when we did a study to compare that, we were at 32 days off with over 50 firefighters over 50 years of age, but we had only six over 50 years of age in 1994. And in that short period of 10 years, we got to where we had a 10% failure rate on our TAS test down to a 0% failure rate. So we saw a dramatic increase in the fitness of our.
As we discussed, in 1994 is when we initiated our firefighter testing program. And in Irving, we called it the firefighter task test. So we referred to that as a task. And in 94, we began that with our 230 firefighters, with only six of our active firefighters on fire equipment over the age of 50 at that time. We had a 10% failure rate and observed a 30% need for immediate rehab after they completed the course. And that wasn't a scientific stat. It was just an observed stat that on average, one person out of every three firefighter company needed recovery in excess of 10 minutes after they took the test, even if they passed the test.
Wow.
The workman's comp average in 1994 was 72 days per injury. That's something that we did itemize. And we fast forwarded 10 years to 2003, and our chief at the time, Paul White, asked us to do a study, a 10-year study, kind of to compare where we were and where we had progressed in 10 short years. And amid the challenges that we'd overcome from a cultural standpoint that we can talk about later during the broadcast, in 2003, we then had 250 firefighters that were tested as opposed to 230 in 94. And now, instead of six firefighters over the age of 50, we now had 50 firefighters over the age of 50 actively fighting fire on fire equipment. At that point, we had a plus or minus 1%, but basically a zero failure rate at that time in only 10 short years, and no observed need for rehab or recovery at that point. Even the ones that passed the test were passing it. They were taking their gear off, take a drink of water, and they're on about their business. So they didn't need any observable rehab at that point, which was very eye-opening. From a workman's comp standpoint, at that point in 2003, our average days off due to workman's comp related injuries was 32 days. So we'd seen a significant cut in the amount of time our firefighters were off, from 72 days in 94 to 32 days in 2003. So in that short period of time, we saw a lot of change and a lot of progression and a lot of change with our culture. So that's where we transited in that short time. And then I'll let Dr. Davis jump in, because he played a pivotal role in that, getting that set up, and then we can talk about where we would progress to into 2019.
Okay, great. Dr. Davis, if you would, please.
Yeah, well, let's go back to my my entry into the fire service in 1966 and our knowledge of the physical performance requirements at that point in time were virtually nil. Interestingly, at the time, for fire departments that actually had some sort of criteria for hiring, it required applicants to be, I think, a minimum of 5'10", and maybe not much else beyond that. But intuitively, I think fire chiefs knew that this is a job that requires a lot of heavy lifting, and heavy lifting is usually done by bigger people. And that was about the extent of it. In 74, I was a lieutenant, Montgomery County, Maryland, at the, and my responsibility, I was the EMT and heavy rescue instructor at the academy, and I was in, I just started a doctoral program at the University of Maryland, and I was invited to join the faculty there, and we were the recipient of one of the first ever FEMA grants, or the predecessor of FEMA, which is the National Fire Protection and Control Administration. So University of Maryland received a grant. I was working then as the director of the Human Performance Laboratory in the School of Public Health at the Sports Medicine Center. And so And at first of its kind, with the support of the Washington, D.C. Council of Governments, we had five fire departments that participated in sending us randomly selected firefighters that would be representative of the age rank distributions of those five political jurisdictions, who came to the University of Maryland, underwent a full battery of fitness assessment at our human performance lab, which included looking at oxygen uptake, our VO2 max, and measures of muscular strength and fitness. And then over with our companion institute, the Maryland Fire Rescue Institute, would undergo a series of linked tasks that would be highly reminiscent of the things that firefighters do around the world. In fact, we would call these essential functions, which by definition under the Americans with Disability Act mean that if you cannot perform these by definition, you can't do the job of being a firefighter. So it's a lift and carry, hoist, simulated forcible entry, and then a rescue, simulated rescue. And that actually became the engine for the Firefighter Combat Challenge. But what we did was to look at the interaction and the predictive value of these fitness measures and interpretively understand the dynamics that contribute to successful performance on the fire ground. So we had 100 subjects, 100 firefighters that participated, and using what a lot of people would think is sort of arcane statistical evaluations or analysis called multiple regression analysis and canonical correlation. But the point is that we can explain the predictors of job performance, and not surprisingly, high levels of fitness correlated very positively with superior performance on the fire ground. And all this goes to understanding what Chief Taylor was talking about in terms of the practical application of this. So doing those sort of things that scientists do, we published in a peer-reviewed journal, and I went on a speaking tour, and I like to say this is called validating the obvious. But what we know and show scientifically is that there is a cause and effect relationship between fitness and job performance. And what I would point away, and we don't have the demonstrative aids, of course, in a podcast, but if you could imagine, when we looked at body composition and performance, not surprisingly, there's a downward trend, meaning the more fat that you have stored beneath your skin, the longer it takes you to perform a series of tasks. And in a very practical sense, the poorest performing group were actually wearing two SCBA units, one real one and another one, the equivalent weight of which is underneath their skin. So if you think about every day getting out there and having to do whatever, climb stairs, pull ceilings, whatnot, and you're encumbered with another 20-some, and that time 28 pounds or so of fat, you can see where performance goes downhill. So that has been the basis for a lot of the follow-on work that I have done in terms of establishing realistic predictors of job performance and setting up employment criteria for fire departments that are actually interested in hiring the best people.
Well, you know, that's interesting what you both said, because it relates back for me. I had never planned on being a firefighter, and becoming a volunteer firefighter was just a different path that life took me down that was unexpected. But I had always been a chubby kid, and I never really was considered obese, but I was always chubby, and you could always see it even when I was in a suit, whatever. But when I joined this department and I realized the toll with some of the drills that were taking on me, I figured I needed to lose some weight just to make myself be able to do the simple things that a volunteer relatively does when they're still a rookie. And so I worked at it. I didn't have a lot of time to go to a gym or work out weights. I just used walking and a diet control. And, you know, I dropped about 20 pounds. it turned out to be probably the best thing I could have done for myself then, because it was only during my second year that I injured my knee, but we believe that's when my back injury came up at the same time. And I lived with that from that point on, knowing that for every 10 pounds on the abdomen, there's 30 pounds extra stress on the spine itself. So I've had to work very hard. Yet when I see some of the videos of firefighters from various departments, and I see the apparent, only because of the videos, though, the apparent health conditions they appear to be in, I wonder if that person is going to be what I call that first domino, the first one on the fire ground who knows they're not in good shape or peak shape, but always wants to be the number one person on the fire ground, always wants to be the one through the door, but they go through the door and boom, they collapse. And that's the first domino out of all the other firefighters, the other dominoes on that fire ground. So I applaud the Irving Fire Department and you, Dr. Davis, for starting this kind of research and work with at such an early time. I'm sure there had to be dozens of other departments that saw the same thing you did, but didn't do anything about it.
Yeah. Well, I can tell you, Steve, and the practical application of this is that, and you get a pretty good working fire, rooming contents or whatever, and the guys who just have really not a lot of energy are sprawled out on the front lawn.
Yes.
Frequently throwing up in her face piece and requiring a lot of rehab. And I think what was interesting about Chief Taylor's talking about how they reduced recovery time from their evaluation, and that carries over right to the fire ground.
Oh, without a doubt. Chief, let me ask you this question. When you started this program, what was the, let's use a nice word, like encouragement that the department used to interest these firefighters to play an active role in this effort?
Well, that was a huge challenge. And of course, myself being a rookie firefighter at that time, didn't have a lot of the pull that you would as a more experienced firefighter. We know how that works around the firehouse.
Right.
However, there were a lot of older firefighters that were passionate about this that helped get the ball rolling with our fitness initiative. And just like Dr. Davis talked about, in 94, I remember a huge multi-alarm fire that we were on all night long. And after just one bottle, there were several of us that had been on our fifth bottle before we had some backup on that, because it was a stormy night. We had a collapse at a hotel, and then we had a resulting fire. We had people responding all over town to all these weather-related emergencies on this specific fire.
Right.
We had actually gone, we were at our fifth bottle before we got any relief. And fortunately, it was a couple of our crews that are in a busy part of town. Everybody was pretty fit, but we had some relief that came. And after one bottle, I observed a few of our older firefighters. They were older and heavier firefighters that were literally laying out, like Dr. Davis talked about, but they were laying out in the street, water running in one end of their coat and out the neck of their coat, just laying there in the river, water flowing outside the building, and they weren't about to move. They were right where they wanted to be. And, you know, that was just how it was back then. That was sort of the culture. And so the first hurdle that we had to overcome was, what are they trying to do to us? What is admin trying to do to us? Are they trying to fire somebody? Is this punitive? And so getting over that curve of, no, we're not looking to hurt anybody. We're looking to extend your life and have you have a healthy, happy retirement. We had people retiring at 50 years old back then that looked like they were 60 and 70 years old. And now we have, as I said, we had six over 50 back then. We have 87 on our department right now that are still actively fighting fire that are over 50 years of age. And they're fit and they're in great shape and they're going to have long, healthy careers and retirements. And then, you know, part of that is, of course, you spend off in the cancer reduction processes and
right.
things of that nature to try to extend their life as we move on in that culture as well. But we had to get over that hurdle of, what are they trying to do to us? It's not punitive. We want you to be better. And we had one captain in particular who said, I've only gained 2 pounds a year. Of course, it was over 25 years, so he put on 50 pounds. So, you know, once you break that down, you start looking at it. 2 pounds a year doesn't sound like a whole lot, yeah, but over a 25-year time frame, that adds up, and it sneaks up on you. And we put on our freshman's 15, so to speak, and then we kind of take off from there. We're frying our food at the fire station, and we're having biscuits and gravy every morning. And then on Saturdays and Sundays, we might add waffles or pancakes. And that was just the tradition at the firehouse. That's what we did.
Right.
And it's funny how that's fast-forwarded. And after just a few short years, I had one captain in particular come up to me. And he said, Jay, he said, I used to be so tired. He goes, I try to chase my wife around the house. And I had to stop and take a break. He goes, now it looks so good she chases me. Because we had everybody with that fitness in their head, and they started changing their culture and their mindset, and we started to get that buy-in from our older officers and firefighters, which, as we all know, that buy-in is the key. That's what you have to have to make any initiative that you start to get the wheels and start rolling, is get that buy-in. And we slowly got that, and they saw that it wasn't punitive, and we weren't firing guys. We might be putting them off for a time if they couldn't pass the exam, but we would get them, our fitness coordinators, to give them prescriptions to get them back on a healthy workout program to get them where they need to be, or rehab them after they had injuries. And all that played together to give us a complete program where we test our firefighters every other year on the task test. Now we fast forward years later, we do it annually. Everybody looks forward to it. They identify members in the field that may be having problems and bring it to others' attention so we can get them the help that they need. And so the mindset has completely changed from, is this punitive? What are they trying to do to us? To what can we do to be better now? And let's help those that need it, because they're going to have to drag me out of a fire at some point, and I want them to be able to do that. So that mindset has changed through the years, and it's been a pleasure to watch and kind of grow with it.
So Jay, let me add a little footnote to the creeping obesity thing. And this is how incipient it can be. You know, we say eternal vigilance is the price of liberty. It's also the same thing for fitness. Being out of balance, one peanut a day, which is 10 calories, in the course of a year will add up to 1 pound. 1 pound is 3,500 calories of stored energy. So it's very difficult sometimes to explain to people how these little things add up. I mean, the cost of a donut is about the metabolic demand for walking a mile. So I think education is a very important part of people taking personal responsibility for their own health and wellness. And, you know, this program with Irving is exemplary in so many ways, because it really does buck a trend. Regrettably, in the fire service, we have a once saved, always saved kind of attitude, where you get out of the academy, you finish your probationary period, and you're off and running, and or walking or not. And the natural tendency is for everything to sort of descend into entropy, whereas you have to have the right mindset from the very get-go. And I've maintained a big part of our problem in the fire service is not hiring the right people. I was up at the academy not too long ago, and I asked the drill master, where in the world did you get these people? We had a bunch of them look like Pillsbury Doughboys, and we know that these guys are not going to get better. And I don't know where we get this attitude that somehow miraculously in 6 months in a Marine Corps style boot camp that we're going to transform people for the rest of their lives. While the fire service is a paramilitary organization, it is completely different from the military. Military tends to chew people up and spit them out in 4 year blocks of time. And when you get 16, 17, or 17, 18, 19, 20-year-old kids, they're already got fitness sort of banked. And if you're talking about the long haul, we have an opportunity to imbue these people with a sense of their personal responsibility for not just the 4 years, but looking over the horizon, 24 years, to realize that length of service retirement that is in everybody's dreams about all the things that they think they're going to do when regrettably, a lot of these people within 18 months of, months of separation are taking a dirt nap. And I think that an inspection of, one, how we recruit people, I think personally that it's not the responsibility of the municipalities to rehabilitate people for the job they should have been ready to do on the first day of work. There are lots of people out there who are dying to get into the fire service, but for whatever other metrics or whatever, we essentially reject these. And fitness is one of the most important components because it's a perishable ability.
Right. Well, Chief, I think you made a great point, which is you answered the question I was going for, which was oftentimes when we start a fitness program, the members feel that it's something punitive, that somebody screwed up, or there's another one of these problems where everybody's getting punished, one bad apple spoiled the barrel. But the fact, the way you explained it, that this had nothing to do with that. This had something, basically was a focus for the future of the Irving Fire Department, of the type of firefighters that were needed, the type of firefighters that were wanted, the type of firefighters that can affect the necessary means to mitigate the disasters, the worst days that the Mrs. Smiths in our communities have, and not, you know, God willing, not require an hour of rehab after pulling the cat out of the tree. And you've shown that, and what Dr. Davis brought up is just as well. And I agree with your last point, Dr. Davis. I don't believe that the fire service, any department, should have to plan on rehabilitating a prospective firefighter. I believe if that person wants to do the job, especially today, it's way different back, you know, when I did it in the mid-70s, but especially today, knowing exactly what the needs are, as long as the department makes those public, that they need to prepare themselves. Now, maybe they had a goal that was 4 pounds more they didn't reach, but nevertheless, if they've worked towards putting themselves in a fitness for duty, and not simply health and wellness. You know, you can have all the muscles in the world and win a Mr. Universe contest. That does not mean that you're fit for duty on the fire ground. And a lot of people still don't see that. They think muscular, being that muscular Mr. Universe, should get anybody past the fire exam. And we just can't let that happen. And we have to clear up that misinterpretation as well.
That's right. Steve, you know, you talk about fit for duty. In 96, I designed T-shirts and shorts for our fitness coordinators to hand out to the entire fire department. And they were Irving Fire Department fit for duty. And they had the weight bar on there and a healthy looking person on there. And we gave it to every person in the fire department. This was what you worked out in when you had your allotted time that we gave back then to work out on duty. And what that did also is that helped with the buy-in, because a guy that normally didn't work out, now he's got a shirt on that says fit for duty. And it just kind of, it kind of makes you want to do a little more. And we saw that actually worked, and something that nominal that we could provide shorts and T-shirts that said fit for duty, it just kind of helped everybody be involved. And, you know, firefighters, there's two things firefighters don't like, and that's change and things the way they are. And so anytime you try to change something, they don't like it. Anytime you try to keep it the same way, they don't necessarily like that either. So you have to find a way to walk that fine line to be able to sell what you're trying to sell, but then get that ownership as well. And Dr. Davis talked about why you hire people that can't do the job. And I look at being a firefighter as being an athlete. What we do, and you can talk to, I have a something I do when I'm not on duty that's athletic related that I do at the college level. And I come across a lot of trainers and a lot of coaches and a lot of players. And they always talk about the firefighting, firefighter fitness. And they said, you guys are athletes. And I really truly believe that firefighters are athletes and have to have that mindset and train in that realm. And everybody would like to be an NFL football player. You know, I wanted to be Roger Staubach when I grew up. And Everybody wants to do that. And a lot of people grow up wanting to be a firefighter. But just because you want to be a firefighter doesn't mean we hand you that job. It's something that needs to be earned, because there's a level of expectation, not only professionally, but mentally and physically, to do this job at the level that's expected of us. And so to have the mindset of anybody can do it, that's not the case. Everybody cannot be a firefighter. Everybody is not made to be a firefighter. So it's our job to find those that can do it, both mentally and physically. And our fitness test is also what we give to our candidates. We give that to our candidates to see if they can pass that before they even get into the further rounds of, you know, polygraph interviews, things of that nature. So it all ties together. But I really truly feel that we look at it as an athletic mindset, that we're athletes. We rehab as athletes. If you have an injury, we get you back on track as quickly as possible. And that has helped progress that as well. It's just what we do is a step above, and you have to have that mindset to realize we're not just somebody out, you know, doing a very unphysical job that's not demanding. What we do is at a high level. It's at a moment's notice. There's a lot of stress. Creates a lot of stress on the family, and that, you know, there's so many conversations you can spin off onto just off of this one concept, but it all ties together. But it's just having that athletic mindset, knowing that what we do is kind of a cut above, and we owe it to ourselves and to the citizens that we serve, keep ourselves in tip-top shape and ready to respond, just like we do our equipment that we talked about earlier.
Sure. I mean, like I've promoted is that when we take an oath to protect lives and property, the first life we have to protect is our own.
Absolutely.
That's the way we're going to serve it. Okay. Well, that was a great way to sum up this first segment, and we're going to take a little break right here, folks. And when we come back with Dr. Davis and Chief Taylor, we're going to be talking about the current program in Irving, Texas, and how and why it's succeeding as well as it is. So we'll be right back right after these words. Please stay tuned. The tone sound and the dispatcher announces, stations 14 and 16, working residential structure. That was all you needed to hear. You jump up from your chair, head to the engine, and climb into the jump seat. As the cue screams, you take stock of your PPE, bunker pants, check, turnout coat, check, hood, check, gloves, check, escape line, check, SCBA strapped on, you're ready. Upon arrival, you jump off the apparatus, grab the loops of the Red Cross lay, and head for the open front door where smoke is pouring out. You make sure your buddy's behind you. You crouch low and make your way inside, your trusty SCBA mask hanging on your tool belt. What? Stop everything. What the hell are you thinking? You see it's a working room and contents fire, and the smoke is banking down almost to the floor. Who do you think you are, Superman? One breath of that crap and the smoke will damage you in some way, guaranteed. All the soot, carbon, carcinogens, and other outgassing materials will enter your body through the pores on your unprotected face. Don't be the domino, the first person down that forces everyone else to change their tasks to take care of you. Always remember, face peace on. You have comrades depending on you and a family to go home to. Face peace on. No matter where we live, or no matter the season, there is always work to be done that makes us sweat. Just how can we keep cool? Well, Hennessy Distributing has the answer. Cool towels. Cool towels are 100% cotton towel and pre-moistened with all natural ingredients. The best part? No water is needed. Just open your cool towel pack, remove the towel, and give it a couple of shakes, and you're all set. Wrap it around your neck like a kerchief, wipe your face, arms, neck, or any exposed skin, and it is approximately 20 to 30 degrees below the ambient temperature. Wait, did it warm up? No problem. Just shake it a couple of times again, and Cool Towel delivers its refreshing cool touch all over again. When the cooling mixture has expired, use your cool towel as you would any cloth or rag around the house. Because it is manufactured from 100% cotton, your cool towel is 100% recyclable. For more information or to get your cool towel today, visit www.cooltowel.com or call 1-800-918-8323. Remember, you're going to work and you're going to sweat. Make Cool Towel your answer to keeping cool. You're ready to call it a night. The kids are tucked in, the lights are out, and the dog's in the den. Seems all is calm. But stop. It's not all right. To keep you and your family safe in the event of a fire, we're advising you to close before you doze. Close your bedroom doors when you go to sleep. Why? because closed doors dramatically decrease heat and carbon monoxide levels, which provide trapped occupants more time for help to arrive. And closed doors can slow the spread of the fire, increase oxygen levels, and decrease temperatures dramatically. You've invested in smoke and carbon monoxide alarms. You've practiced fire escape plans with your family. Now learn another important way to protect all of you. Close before you doze. Also remember, if you are able to escape, make sure the last one out closes the main door. Remember, close before you doze. This message is brought to you by the UL Firefighter Safety Research Institute, closebeforeyoudoze.org, your local fire department, and this podcaster. Welcome back to this episode of Five Alarm Task Force, news and issues for today's first responders. And my guests today are Dr. Paul Davis and Assistant Chief Jack Taylor with the Irving, Texas Fire Department. And we're talking about this tremendous and very positive fitness program that Irving started approximately 25 plus years ago for all of its firefighters and how it's continued to today. So Chief Taylor is going to talk to us now about what's going on with the program today. Here we are, you know, 2.5 decades, a little bit more later, and yet it's still a very strong, positive, and ongoing program. Chief, if you'll explain that to our listeners as to what's giving you that success, please.
Sure, Steve. Our fitness program has been dynamic, and it's changed throughout the years and constantly being reassessed and making tweaks where we needed to do that. And one thing we saw when we first implemented this program way back in 1994 is Dr. Davis had suggested that, you know, maybe you test on an 18-month time frame. And at that point, it was feasible for us to begin the program on a 24-month time frame where we would administer the fitness task test, what we call a task test in Irving. Is our basically it's based off the combat challenge, but it's a little bit different. We're not breathing air, but we are in our full gear, PPE. And that's how we've always done it. And we had that certified years ago by a consultant. So it's a certified test that we've used. We also give that test to our fire candidates, those who have taken our written exam and then go through and do the physical agility. They take the exact same physical fitness test that our firefighters take every other year for years and years that we've done it that way. Just a few short years ago, the city of Irving implemented a program called iWin that they've been recognized for. It's been a great program, and it's an incentive program for employees of the city of Irving to stay fit. And with that program, depending on the parameters that you meet, and initially it was non-fire related. It was, and it still is, the iWin itself is. It has to do with running and lifting and jumping and stretching and flexibility and all those components that you have, anaerobic exercise that you're evaluated on. And our firefighters took part in that for several years. But what we were seeing is you get them out on a track, you get a bunch of competitive firefighters on a 400 meter track and tell them to run a 300 or a mile and a half, which both of those were components of the iWin, then a race ensues. Or I know what your time was, so I'm going to try to beat it. So we started seeing a strain of calves and pulled hamstrings and things of that nature doing this test for a $150 a month boost in their pay, depending on what your times were. And that was from the city of Irving. And so being competitive, it wasn't just pass or fail for firefighters. You had to start trying to beat the other firefighters' time.
Right.
You're absolutely going to beat the times that the police department posts. So that's just how it is. And so through that, we've kind of progressed to the point where now we have instituted in a couple of years ago, with the help of Chief Conley, who you met a few weeks ago, talking about the blocker program.
Right.
We got with the city stakeholders and asked them if we could change the dynamics of the iWin for the fire department and include our firefighter task test as our component for this iWin pay program. And it took a little bit of selling and showing them what it does for us and kind of the injuries that we've incurred just taking the fitness test. And they've allowed us to do that. We've been doing it the last 2 years. And so now it's still only mandatory to take the firefighter task test every other year, every 24 months. So we have our odd and even year individuals. We have it split throughout the fire department. However, now it's the firefighter's option. If they would like to take it in their off year, and even their annual year, their year where they test in their off year. They can take it also with the added component of doing it for their time to get their $100 or $150 extra a month through the city. And that has worked extremely well. And what that's done for us, because we've often thought about in the past making it an annual exam. But again, like we talked about earlier, you know, the two things firefighters don't like are change and things the way they are. So going from 24 months, which we had buy-in on, to go to a 12-month test was going to be another challenge. But when we got it sold to our city stakeholders, city management team, that they incur the task test and allow us to use that as our component for our iWin program, they bought off on that. Well, now the firefighters are taking it every year, and it's their decision, but they're getting a benefit from it, and it's working great. And so without having to, you know, put that into our policy where it's an annual program, it's now become an annual program at their choice, and it's been great. And they also have an option now to do a row on a Concept 2 rower that we do, and we've been doing that for about 5 or 6 years now, where we can also do a fitness program off the Concept 2 rowing machine. So they have an option, even if it's just somebody with bad knees or and they choose to do the rower instead of the task test, they can do that for their money, but they still are required every other year to take the task to remain on department. Because if you hit your time that's allotted, you stay on duty. But then we have a parameter for, you know, we say a 45, someone that's under 45 years of age, their time on the task test is under 6 minutes. So they have to finish that test in 5:59 or less. And if they do that, they've passed it. We also have a department accepted tolerance that we put on there that is adjusted. And for instance, that same individual, if they fail it under 6 minutes, but they do pass it in under 9 minutes and 30 seconds, then they've passed it under department accepted tolerance. So they remain on duty. However, we put them with one of our certified fitness coordinators to put them on a training program to get them back to where they need to be.
Right.
Now, if they take that test and they fail it outside the department accepted tolerance, then they're immediately taken off duty. They're put on a 40-hour week, which firefighters don't like, and we put them on a prescription, and they work for 90 days. Even if they improve quickly, they're going to be in that program for 90 days, and then they'll reassess and take the task test again. And we've seen a tremendous success with that. It's gotten to where, like I said, we've had very few that pass it altogether, that fail it, excuse me, altogether. But the ones that do rebound and bounce back quickly. And then those that are off on injury, whether it's an injury-related, work-related injury or a non-work-related injury, if they're off for 60 days or more, when they come back, within 15 calendar days, they have to take the task test. So they have to be prepared to pass that when they come back. And so they know coming back that there's a fitness level that's an expectation that they have to have. Now, we've also included for about the last 15 years is on our off years. The task test is mandated on every 24 months. On that off year, all of us now have been going for several years to a full doctor's physical. And that's your blood workups, doing everything that's required there, as well as a Bruce protocol stress test on the treadmill. So we do that on our off years. And that gives us a great baseline to fall back on as far as our total fitness. And that has saved a lot of our firefighters through the years. And we've caught a lot of other illnesses that have been flagged during that, where we've gotten a lot of treatment. And in some instances, life-saving treatment for our firefighters. So it's now progressed into a full program to where it's not just, you know, how we are on duty and how fit we are to do our job, but also how healthy we are. Because we want our firefighters, our members, as they progress to end their careers in a healthy manner and have long, long, healthy retirements. We don't want somebody retiring like they used to at 50, and then by 53, we don't have them anymore. They've passed away. And so we're already starting to see a lot of our firefighters that retired 10, 15, 20 years ago that are still, they look like they can still work here. And so, and I think that comes from our grassroots effort of how we started this so long ago, and we've stuck to it, and we've progressed, and we learned from other departments as well what works and what doesn't. But the buy-in is there. The culture has changed. The culture has changed with our fitness program and the buy-in, just like it's starting to across the country with the cancer initiatives and no longer having the badge of courage of a black helmet and black gear and everything burned and smoked up like we used to have. And we've learned that that's not healthy. That'll kill you. And that's starting to change. It's the same with the fitness program. It's, you know, the stronger, Steve, you talked about earlier, the stronger, bigger firefighters, you can muscle through anything on the fire ground usually with weight. You know, girth does help you, but what we found years ago is that girth helps you, but when you're done doing the job, it can kill you. And right. So what do we do on the backside of that? And that's where we've progressed. That's kind of where our mindset was as we navigated these, you know, these rivers of getting to the point where we are now.
Well, you know, I think what's really great to hear is that you have this basic full buy-in in the department, and that firefighters know this is part of their program in this department, and to do their job to the best of their ability. And as you said, there's always a little, firefighters love to have a little competition. And when it's friendly competition, and you're talking about these kind of programs that help increase firefighter health, wellness, and fitness for duty, then that buy-in brings along, is almost self-feeding at that point, because they're feeling better. They're competing a little bit on these, getting ready for these tests, and I'm sure some of them work out together and get themselves ready together. We can see so much of it online today on social media, where firefighters are devising new tools to help that aren't expensive, so that people don't think they have to, you know, pay $5,000 a year for membership in a health club, where they can get make up their own little tools to use for their fitness program. And when you have that, you have a whole different attitude of the person coming into it. It doesn't become, it, matter of fact, punitive just disappears, fades away in the ether of the fun that they're having as they get themselves ready for what they want to do.
Really, the only punitive we see now is not in our policy that we have, because you have those built in there that if there's ongoing issues, there's ways to deal with it, but we haven't had to. The punitive measure you see is peer pressure out in the field. You see those other firefighters putting pressure on those that aren't keeping up to standard, and they usually do it in a positive way to help get them up to where we need to be. And you know, years ago, we put equipment in all of our fire stations to give them access to the equipment to work out and get them to the point to where they need to be. And it went to where initially, just like all of us do, they were cramming for the exam. And they knew the TAS test was coming up when it was first implemented, and they would cram for a month. They'd get ready for the TAS test and get through it and pass it. But then it's progressed to where you see them work out year round. It's just become part of our nature, and that's what we do now. And we're a healthier department, both physically and the eye test. You know, when you go out and you see a customer in the fire service, everything we do is customer based. And most of it, you know, anytime we have an interaction with anyone in the public, there's always a first impression, whether you're going on a job interview or you're going to take care of a citizen in need. There is always that first impression, regardless of what your profession is. And if you come in there looking sloppy, shirt tail out, you're not fit, you look disengaged, you're already fighting an uphill battle as far as trying to show them how professional you are. You may be the best firefighter paramedic in the world, but if you come in there looking all disheveled and unfit, that's a tough hill to climb sometimes. And so when you walk in there looking sharp and uniform fits right and you have it tucked in and everything is clean and not faded and doesn't have holes in it, that first impression is everything. And that's everything we do is about customer service. And those citizens, you know, the reason we have a fire department is because of our citizens, because we're a public entity. We're based on taxes, and they take care of us and pay our salaries, and we serve them in return. And it's a win-win situation, but we just have to do our part. And part of that is our fitness and how we look. And the eye test, as I like to call it, has greatly improved through the years, just through the migration of how we work through this physical fitness program. And it's a joy to see. And I'm very blessed to have been hired on the forefront of that. And I've been involved in it my entire career. And it's something, you know, we have a lot of great initiatives we put in place, especially in the last 5 years under Chief Conley, but this is something that's gone on my entire career, and we've just continually worked to make it better and improve it. And we'll improve that into the future, but, you know, we owe it to our firefighters, and we owe it to our citizens. And so it's something that we take very seriously. And I know that a lot of departments across the country have now become very passionate about fitness as well. And, you know, you learn and you read and you see what other departments are doing. And none of us want to reinvent the wheel. You want to do what works. But at that point, back 25 years ago, it was kind of a new thing. And we kind of did reinvent the wheel from our perspective and kind of ran with it. And then once the other initiatives nationally came on board, we kept doing our program, but we also melded it into what the other standards were, whether it be NFPA or the IFF or the IFC, as far as what their initiatives wanted us to accomplish. So it's been a great transition through the years to see where we were in the beginning and where we are now.
Well, that's great.
So Jay, let me ask you a question. Do you know at what point in the evolution of your program you sort of came to the turning point where the preponderance of your members were with the program as opposed to fighting it or thinking this is yet one more trick of management to get rid of me?
I think, Dr. Davis, I really think that just from my own perception and my recollection of being in the field, it seemed like a relatively short time. I'm going to say 3 to 5 years. I think that the first couple of years, it was real sketchy and there was a lot of pushback from our members. But as they saw, one, that the department wasn't trying to get anybody fired. They weren't coming after anybody. You know, in the past in the fire department, we had the shotgun approach. When one guy makes a mistake and you set a policy out, it's the shotgun approach that kind of hits everybody. And that's kind of how it was done back in the old days. But, you know, we've progressed. We've grown above that, matured above that. And this was one of the first things we'd done with this department where it was isolating a problem and realizing we can help these individuals into the future. We've just got to stand fast. And that was our administrator. I wasn't an admin then, but I was one of them that was one of the CFCs, fitness coordinators. But our stance was, we're here to help you. We're here to make you better. And we're here to give you a long life and a long retirement. And we just kept preaching that, being passionate about fitness. And, you know, we were Hans and Franz, and they had all the nicknames for us for years and would make fun. But it really took a relatively short period, about 3 to 5 years, which is 2 to 3 evolutions of taking the exam every other year. And you saw a quick buy-in because, you know, the firefighters started to see, oh, I'm getting better at this. This is actually helping me. And instead of, like I said, cramming for the exam, so to speak, and just working out 30 days, getting it prepped for the task test, they were starting to do it for 2 or 3 months and 4 or 5 months and then 6 or 8 months. And then the next thing you know, they're starting to work out for the majority of the department routinely year round. And so they kind of just self-evolved, and then peer pressure played a huge part in it. And then as the younger members that came up through that culture started getting into leadership roles within the department, that helped as well. You know, as I progressed up as a driver, then a lieutenant, then a captain, and on through the department, now here I am an assistant chief, got that short straw, and here I am downtown. But I'm very passionate about where we are, but I can share that with our firefighters. But now, it sells itself now. I really don't ever have to even go out there and preach fitness because the young guys are all into it. And it makes the older guys and girls, and I say guys collectively, and I tell our ladies that too, that when I say guys, that includes everybody. But it's just, it's all inclusive now, and it's just part of the culture. And it really, I think, 3 to 5 years, it really turned a corner at that point. And then at 10 years, we had data that we could share with them. And then anybody that they couldn't argue it at that point, for sure. When we did that study at 10 years, and that really, those few that are driven by data were sold on the fact that it's made a huge, huge, you know, improvement with our department. And then you go to 2019. Now we have 379 that we test on now an annual basis, and we have over 87 firefighters that are over the age of 50 now. We're back in 94, we only had 6. That's due to a couple of different reasons, but a lot of it is they're more fit and they're doing their job still. They don't feel old. They feel like they can still do the job. We have several 62, 63-year-olders out there in the field that are performing as well as they ever have, if not better.
That's great.
The pass rate's still at, or fail rate, excuse me, it's still at plus or minus 1%, basically no one. And workman's comp is less than 30 days. I don't have new data on that, but I do know it's less than 30 days. So that continues to slightly creep downward, which is great. And so we learned how to cushion the blow of being an older fire department by giving an annual open book test, so to speak. You know what the test is? You know what the answers are. You just have to go out there and accomplish that. And so that's really made it work for us. And then now we're slowly starting to become a younger department quickly. And so, but that culture's there, the mindset's there. So that is, that's where we've improved and where we changed. And it's been fun to watch, but the members' attitudes increased in a very short period of time, Dr. Davis.
That's great. That's great to hear. Dr. Davis, I have a question. I'm not sure if you want to answer it in this segment or go to the final segment, but a lot of people who may be listening to this are saying, well, that's a career department. I'm in a volunteer or combination department. That career department has lots of money. But my department doesn't have that kind of money to do something like this. What am I supposed to do? I want to, have you heard that? Have you seen that kind of pushback?
The status of volunteerism in this day is becoming more and more tenuous. All of the demographics seem to point to the fact that people are no longer volunteering for just about any of these civic types of activities. And you think about people who are interested in putting something back in their community, can join the Rotary or Lions Club and go to, you know, have a breakfast or lunch or whatever. And we're talking about a very serious commitment of time. I mean, just for starters, you're looking at north of over, 100 hours to get your EMT program, So that presents a major, major challenge. I tell you, and I have met with and talked to, volunteer chiefs and such. And there are very, very few programs out there where there's any kind of incentive. And I have to tell you quite honestly, I mean, that you probably could count on one hand those volunteer departments that may actually have some sort of meaningful fitness initiatives. So, Steve, I'm sorry, but, it's just the salami can only get sliced so many ways. And when you talk about a paucity of people willing to step up and join the local fire department, then on top of that, you put some sort of requirements on them. I think it's an almost impossible mission.
Well, we just podcast with Chief John Buckman, who's very much has many years in the volunteer. And we're talking about the age of today and the broken model of volunteer fire departments based on Ben Franklin's brotherhood, brother helping brother sort of situation. Yet we do know that there are people who still are willing to contribute to their communities by being volunteer firefighters. Chief, do you think that there's a way, for example, I know there are volunteer departments scattered around the county areas outside of Irving and, the greater Dallas-Fort Worth metro areas and stuff like that. For example, has Irving made an attempt to maybe share the success of the program with other departments, maybe some of the volunteer accommodation departments in your greater area?
We know, to give you a little perspective, those that don't know, Irving is in the DFW Metroplex, and we're just on the west side of Dallas and sandwiched in between the city of Dallas and Dallas-Fort Worth Airport. So we're really in the central part of DFW. And then you go out several miles, you start seeing those volunteer departments. Officially, no, we have not. Other than we do National Fire Academy Executive Officer Program, we meet a lot of chiefs that are either with volunteer or combination departments. And I always tell them my hat's off to them because I just don't know how they do it, because to be able to have the retention of their firefighters is such a difficult challenge that they deal with. To add another component is tough because you don't want to run them off, because it's hard to get good quality volunteer firefighters, and they're having an issue across the country with that. But from an unofficial perspective, we have a lot of firefighters on our department here in Irving that live out in the rural areas, whether it be East Texas, North, or West Texas.
Right.
And a lot of them, we have several that actually are officers or chiefs of volunteer departments. And so through them, unofficially, they've taken that concept out there with them to share that. And so they've put that in a way that works for them, and just try to promote it as just kind of a esprit de corps type situation where, it's a chance to come together and train. But while they're there, they may do a little bit of physical fitness activity together as a group. to get that esprit de corps. And so where you can't put that, we're blessed in Irving where we have the ability to put a financial component on there and get a little added bump and benefit and buy the equipment and spend that extra money to do the doctor's physicals and the things. And that's also been a huge buy-in with our city council, our city management, and the stakeholders in town. So we're blessed from that perspective. But when you talk about volunteer and combination departments, it's a huge challenge for them, not only just retaining their volunteer firefighters, period, but also how to add a component like that and not run them off or scare them off. So I think ours have seen that just doing it from the perspective of an inclusive type, hey, we're in this together. We're going to do a little bit of this physical fitness training while we're doing our fire training, or do fire-based training that is very physical. So while they're doing their fire-based training, they don't realize that they're actually getting a workout in. So that's kind of the way they've had to approach that. And they've seen successes, and I've talked to a few of them about that and what they do from a physical fitness perspective. So they are trying to address it, but they have obviously different challenges than we have to deal with here at a paid department. So
certainly,
that's an interesting dynamic. And like I said, my hat's off to any chief out there with a volunteer or combination department, because I think that the challenges that they deal with every day in and day out is just, it amazes me how they function at the level that they do and just do an absolutely great job across the country. And, I'm a sponge. Anytime I'm around them, I learn as much from those guys as I do from anyone from a paid department, sometimes more. So, I welcome the opportunity anytime I get around them.
That's great to hear. Well, Chief, I think that is good news to hear, and that your firefighters are willing to share. And I know from some of the guests we've had on the show who are firefighters who are into firefighter fitness and fitness for duty, they too are willing to share. I know my friend Aaron Zamzow up in, I think, Wisconsin, has several contests during the year for his firefighters to join up from around the country. I think they've even had a couple from Canada, and I think maybe one from south of the border. I don't know for sure. But these people do work their butts off. He provides a complete training program for them, and I know that there must be other firefighters out there. So we can take Irving as a great model for career departments to look at, and I think that the very fact that you have the city leaders invested into the program and into your department as a whole says great things about Irving and knowing how to work within their framework of their community so well. Because oftentimes we have these divisive walls that are put up between the community leaders and the fire and the first responders, fire, EMS, law enforcement. But there's always a way to bridge those as long as you make the firefighters. I've always said that firefighters have to make that first pass. You invite the city leaders to a firefighter 101 day, let them put on the gear and let them flow water and let them be on air and see what it's like, what it takes us to do. You put them through a maze with a blackout mask. Give them that idea of what it's like to be dressed with all that gear and what we do. And they usually come out of that much more appreciative of the jobs and don't see us any longer as, well, they sit around, you know, 85% of the day, and then 10% of that is what the rest of the time is EMS. So they don't have to really work hard, and 5% is fire. Well, they realize that's not the case once they've had that. But the fact that Irving has the city leaders behind them is a great, great forward step that hopefully will keep you folks as strong as you are right now for many years to come. And Dr. Davis, with your input and what you've said and shared of how that program was created, is a great stepping stone for any other department that's interested. So what I'd like to do is from both of you, if you're willing to share your email addresses with our listeners so that if they have questions, by the way, as you may have heard at the beginning of the full podcast that where Dr. Davis's bio is, he has a business called the First Responder Institute. And so he's willing to, you know, let you be in touch with him and learn more about the programs as that you've heard about here, and how possibly you can bring those to your department itself. So, Dr. Davis, what's a good email for them to reach you?
Yeah, mine's paul.davis@macmac.com.
Okay. And Chief?
Yes, sir. My email address is jtaylor, no dot, it's J-T-A-Y-L-O-R, at cityofirving.org. And Irving is I-R-V-I-N-G.
Okay, great. And it's not Irvington, folks. That was my mistake. and Chief Cronley would have really kicked my butt if I had said it with him. So I'm glad I escaped it during his podcast and didn't make the same mistake.
He'll appreciate that.
All right. Well, gentlemen, I can't thank you enough for sharing time out of busy schedules to talk about this. I think this is could be a great impetus to fire departments around the country. And again, we have listeners around the world. And again, it's not, you can't translate it into effect for every department, but many departments, I think, can at least learn from this and start and maybe, you know, tailor, pardon the pun, but tailor their own program to help them increase the fitness for duty in their department from what they can learn from today's podcast. So, gentlemen, thank you again so much. Stay safe, stay well, and I hope to bring you back in a couple of months for an update.
It was a pleasure. Thank you, Steve.
Thank you very much. Folks, we'll be right back right after these words. Please stay tuned. You are listening to Five Alarm Task Force, news and issues for today's first responders.
It's Thursday night, and you're grabbing drinks with some friends. Started off with a pitcher for the table, which quickly becomes two. There's pool. And there's the photo booth.
All right, everybody, squeeze in. Say cheese!
Followed naturally by an order of wings. And another.
Can we get some extra ranch sauce?
Then there's the ceremonial nightcap.
So what are we doing this weekend?
And lastly, it's back to the car, which, if you're buzzed...
6-8-10-9-10-4.
Could be the most expensive night of your life. Getting pulled over for buzz driving could cost you around $10,000 in fines, legal fees, and increased insurance rates. Nothing kills a buzz like getting pulled over for buzz driving, because buzz driving is drunk driving. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Dear John, I was hoping it wouldn't come to this, but you've left me no choice. I'm leaving. Uncontrolled high blood pressure is really serious, and lately you seem to really not care. I've been there for you since day one, and I know you think I'm going to keep ticking. But no, my friend, I can quit whenever I want. Why can't we get back to the good times, when we were more active and ate more healthy foods, and you checked on me every once in a while? Is that too much to ask? I don't want to leave, but unless you stop ignoring me, what else am I supposed to do? Remember, when I quit, you quit. Sincerely, your heart.
Listen to your heart. Don't let it quit on you. Doing the minimum to control your high blood pressure isn't doing enough. High blood pressure can lead to a stroke, heart attack, or death. Get your blood pressure to a healthy range before it's too late. Find out how at heart.org/bloodpressure. Check, change, control. A message from the American Heart Association, the American Stroke Association, and the Ad Council.
Well, that was quite a podcast we had today. And if you're a regular listener to our podcast, you know that firefighter health, wellness, and fitness for duty, along with the cancer and behavioral health initiatives, are an important part. Actually, they're part of the mission statement of this podcast. Because when I started this podcast, I was sick and tired of reading the obituaries in the trades of our brave men and women who were dying from what looked like, in the listing, a possibly preventable health issue. Now, in Irving, Texas, they really grabbed the bull by the horns, if you'll pardon the pun, and started this program that's over 25 years old. And that every firefighter, since it started inception in the 90s through today, has bought in on the program. Because there's something to get out of it. You get a healthy position while you're working, and hopefully you're going to have a healthy retirement when you're done. But this just doesn't come to you. This is something you have to want to do. I've seen the videos on Periscope, and you've seen them too, of severely, not just overweight, but obese men and women out on the fire ground. And most of them are volunteers. There's no doubt about it. And thank God for every one of them that wants to help out and volunteer in their community. But it's important that we keep those firefighters just as healthy as Irving, Texas is working to keep their firefighters. Because the last thing you want in a volunteer or combination department is a line of duty death at all, under any circumstances, let alone if it's found to be caused by a preventable health issue. Those of us who have gone through a line of duty death in their department know what a tremendous shock and trauma it is to every member. It's not something that you want to go through. But you can't just wave a magic wand and end it. You can't just say, we're going to have a program now for you, help you get healthier. Okay, go do it. Doesn't work that way, folks. You, the healthy ones in the department management team, chiefs and officers, have to get together and lay out this program. And then you all have to buy into it and be the examples that are set, even if you're in peak condition. The fact is, as we discussed here today, that you can be you can have a Mr. Universe physique. That doesn't mean you're fit for duty. Just because you have all those muscles and you've been standing in a room posing at the mirror and doing specific lifts and exercises that stress those particular muscles. In the fire service, we don't need that. In the fire service, we need healthy men and women who want to support their communities and do a job that most people could never walk into doing. And that's the job that we do as firefighters. But just the desire to be a firefighter isn't enough. You have to be able to be fit for duty. And volunteer and combination departments have to work with this program, have to create their own program, if that's what it takes, to make your volunteers fit for duty. Everyone has to buy into it. Because if they don't, you won't have any success. And we all know that we don't want to see the opposite side of a failure in this endeavor. So please, think about it. If you've heard this podcast today, listen to it again. Listen to what Dr. Davis and Chief Jack have to say. You can do it if you want to. And the greater you, your department can do it if you want to. To keep your firefighters healthy and fit for duty, I hope you will want to. And that's my view.
Every year, over 1 million fires burn in America. Fortunately, firefighters are on the job, saving life and property, and you can be a part of it. 7 out of 10 firefighters and emergency responders are volunteers. There's no typical firefighter. Anyone can volunteer to serve their community. Volunteering as a first responder is really about having the heart and drive to make a difference where it's needed most. Your community needs you. Are you ready to answer the call? Learn more and find local volunteer opportunities at makemeafirefighter.org.
And that wraps this episode of 5 Alum Task Force, news and issues for today's first responders. We'd like to thank our guests, Dr. Paul Davis and Assistant Chief Jack Taylor, for joining us to discuss the very successful fitness program at Irving, Texas Fire Department. Did you know you can now find us and subscribe to us on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, and most podcast platforms? Just search for Five Alarm Task Force. We also want to thank our sponsor, Insight Training, LLC, and our promotional partners, Dalmatian Productions, The Firehouse Tribune, Chief Miller Products and Sites, Hennessy Distributing, your source for the cool towel, the Firefighter Cancer Foundation, the Firefighter Cancer Support Network, Nestor Bars, and the 2019 Great Florida Fire School. If you would like to be a guest with us or have a suggestion for a show, please drop us a line to dalmatprod@outlook.com. You can follow us on Twitter at dalmatprod or at @cause_origin, and on Facebook at /dalmatprod or /dalmatprodfire, and stay up to date with all the news about our podcast, Dalmatian Productions, and our blog on our website at www.dalmatianproductions.tv. I'm Steve Green. Until next time, stay safe, stay well, and let's make sure everyone goes home.